Well, good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock in Juneau. You're in tune with KTOO-FM. This is Pat Moore. I'm hosting Juneau Afternoon today. And we have a lineup of guests that should promise to be very interesting. Lori Soa will be here in a couple of minutes with Max Martell. They're going to tell us about the pre-engineering classes at the University of Alaska Southeast. We'll hear a special reading by Will Swagel from Sitka of The Bite Before Christmas, a special poem for the season. And Dan Hobson will be in to tell us about his solo classical guitar album. It's a long ways from the Chicken Ridge Rowdies. Weather, rain, diminishing this afternoon, highs around 40, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, and tonight cloudy, scattered rain showers diminishing overnight, lows around 31, light winds.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The number of Native American tribes developing power plants that run on renewable energy fuels may be growing. Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports on a planned project in Milwaukee.
The Forest County Potawatomi want to build an $18 million power plant near downtown Milwaukee and burn enough food waste to generate electricity and heat for their nearby casino. A few other Native American tribes in the U.S. are running biogas plants. Potawatomi Attorney General Jeff Crawford says he thinks more tribes will soon try using renewable energy.
In some respects, I think the way of the future is a lot of smaller green energy type of power plants instead of these massive, you know, coal-fired plants.
Crawford says to get this far, the Potawatomi did an energy audit. Then the tribe got help from the U.S. Department of Energy and a Wisconsin Renewable Energy Program. Local and state permits are still needed for the Milwaukee biogas plant, and a coalition of community and environmental groups has been trying to reduce pollution at a local coal-fired plant. The Sierra Club's Emily Myota says she'll watch to see that the Potawatomi plant would not harm air quality.
We're not talking about a really big project. And then beyond that, as they move through the permit process, that's when, you know, you really get into the details, the devil is in the details, and ensuring that all along the way, whatever pollutants do end up coming out of the plant, that those are actually meeting health standards. But generally speaking, we're definitely supportive of biodigesters.
The Potawatomi biogas facility could be operating within 2 years. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach in Milwaukee.
A special assembly of chiefs in Ottawa has heard from Canada's top Native leader that the relationship with the federal government is not working, and he says the biggest obstacle to progress is the Indian Act. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, much of the two-day meeting was taken up by the political and housing crisis over a reserve in northern Ontario.
Sean Atleo is the National Chief of Canada's Assembly of First Nations. He says the Indian Act is a relic of the 19th century and continues to hold Native people back from better lives. Atleo says it is still a tragic and frustrating time for Aboriginal people in Canada. Too many, he says, struggle with substance abuse and suicide and more.
Too many of our children sit each day in cold, moldy classrooms, suffering from lingering illnesses bred by dirty drinking water and unsafe homes.
National attention over the past couple of weeks has focused on the housing emergency at the Attawapiskat First Nation in northern Ontario, where the Red Cross has intervened to help. Atleo says the crisis at Attawapiskat is a wake-up call to the rest of Canada.
Canada saw for the first time last week what we see every single day.
Atleo says too many First Nations people across Canada live in appalling conditions, something he describes as a national disgrace, and it's no wonder they feel angry and betrayed. Atleo says he's heard many Native leaders say it's time to decolonize the thinking, to bring healing into First Nations homes, and to say once and for all the pain and injustice must stop here. He says a meeting with the Prime Minister set for the end of January will be critical and could be the country's moment of reckoning in the relationship with First Nations. And he says to achieve change, Native people must be unified and not fighting one another. Atleo says what it boils down to is that First Nations are extending a hand to Ottawa to work in partnership to form a renewed relationship based on rights. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In Washington State, the Seattle Human Rights Commission awarded Heather Purser, a member of the Suquamish Indian Tribe, the 2011 Seattle Human Rights Award. Purser helped convince her tribe this year to pass a law recognizing same-sex marriage. She received the award because of her advocacy for LGBT rights. On this day in 1531 in Mexico, Juan Diego Anahuac man accounts seeing an apparition of a woman, today known by Catholics as Our Lady of Guadalupe. The appearance prompted the conversions of many native people to the religion. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you can get free legal help with filing a claim at meetings held around the country through December. Details and a schedule of meetings is at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after 3, and you're in tune with KTOO-FM. Our weather forecast is for rain to continue for the rest of the afternoon. The highs should be around 40, so it's going to be sloppy and kind of like that. It's supposed to drop down to 31 tonight, so we'll be walking around on ice, and then it's supposed to thaw out again tomorrow. So Saturday will be highs around 35 with light winds. I guess there's a chance of rain and snow for Saturday morning, so I expect it to mix up and clog up the windshield wipers and all that sort of stuff in the morning. Keep an eye out for slippery roads. This is Black Ice Country. My first two guests are involved in a program that started about 4 years ago at the University of Alaska Southeast, which is a pre-engineering program. And Lori is the you're kind of in charge of the program, or you're one of the people who sort of runs it, Lori Sella?
Yeah, I'm the pre-engineering program coordinator, and I also teach the engineering classes.
Mm-hmm. And you have a background, you are an engineer?
Yeah, I have I'm a degree in civil and environmental engineering and a master's degree in environmental science and engineering, and I'm registered as a professional engineer in the state of Alaska.
So were you in on the inception of the program at UAS?
I was hired just before classes started, actually, the first year of the program, so I wasn't part of the original creation of the program, but since it's been in place at UAS, I've been there. So.
Okay, and Max, you're a student in the program. This is your second, you're starting your second semester in this program.
Yes.
But you have a degree, you came into this program with another degree, right?
A degree in music business.
Uh-huh, and that was from?
From Florida at Full Sail University, which is in Orlando.
Okay, so you're from Miami, you said?
Yes, from Miami, which is in Orlando.
Oh, okay, so I guess the first big question would be, did you get on the airplane by mistake, or how is it that you came to be a Junoite?
I originally came to visit my dad. He lives in Gustavus, and I just never left after that. I really loved it here. And then I came to UAS sort of on a whim. I was going to go to Fairbanks, but I missed the deadline. So I came to Juneau first, and I liked it, so I stayed.
Now, so you did a year in another major program before you yep. switched over to pre-engineering.
I started in mathematics.
Okay, and I sense a big difference between a degree in music business and a degree in engineering, and I'm wondering how that transition happened in your life. How did you come to be in a pre-engineering program?
Well, I knew I was interested in business, but I didn't really want to stop there. Every subject that I've looked at so far, I've really enjoyed. So the culmination of that was engineering uses all of the different disciplines to get the job done, and that's kind of what I fell on then.
So now, Lori, when Max finishes next semester, then he'll be through the pre-engineering, the component of the pre-engineering program that's at UAS.
Yeah.
And then what follows that?
Yeah, so our pre-engineering program at UAS is a one-year certificate program that allows students to take the a year's worth of classes that they would normally take during the first year of a four-year engineering degree. So students typically spend 1 to 2 years here actually completing those requirements, and then they move on to either UAA or UAF, or sometimes they would go out of state, but most of our students do decide to stay in state.
So what are the courses that a student would take in that first year here?
Okay, so the courses would be math courses, of course, calculus, English courses, science courses, including chemistry or physics, and first-year engineering courses. And so there are three courses that we offer at UAS, and one is an introduction to engineering course, which is just a broad introduction to the field, and it's a course that we've worked to make more project-based over the last couple of years, and so Max actually just built a hydropower generator as his final project for the class. So that's been a fun class to teach. We also offer a seminar course next semester, a one-credit course where I bring in local practicing engineers from a really wide range of backgrounds to talk about what they do, to give students an exposure to the variety of different types of work that engineers can get involved with, and also a MATLAB programming course. So students learn how to program in a language to help the computer help them solve math, science, and engineering problems. We also have one new course for next semester that I'd like to talk about briefly. We're working with UAF to bring an introduction to electrical engineering course to campus here in Juneau. So students who are interested specifically in electrical engineering can take this course. It's sort of a blended distance on-site program because Denise Thorson, who's the faculty member at UAF, is going to video conference her lecture, and then I'm going to help facilitate the lab portion of the course. And it looks to be a really fun course. Students will get to actually build circuits, including soldering and the various components, and then they'll do a design project where they get to build whatever they want to. So
UAF has had a strong electrical engineering department for years and years. Electronic engineering before that kind of slid to the side and became more of a computer thing. But their electrical engineering program has always had a really good reputation, I think, in-state particularly, but nationally as well.
Yeah. And this course gives students an exposure to both electrical and computer engineering, which the two fields are very closely related. And actually their department at UAF is a combination electrical and computer engineering.
Max, when we were talking before, Lori characterized the program as one that kind of is designed to allow you to make choices among the various specialties in engineering. Have you found that to be the case, or do you feel like you've been exposed to enough to be able to make intelligent decisions about what you might want to do with your eventual engineering degree?
Yes, we start with one of the basic fields of mechanics and go through all the different required courses that you're going to take through your engineering degree despite the specialty. But we also talked about all the different actual specialties themselves. So I have a pretty good understanding of what I want to do now because of this course.
You started to center in? You got an idea of what you want to make it?
I didn't even know what engineers really did before this course, so I learned a lot about that.
Uh-huh. What specialty are you thinking of now?
Right now I'm thinking about petroleum and or mining, but it does change from day to day.
Both again, strong programs at the University of Alaska Fairbanks particularly. So it sounds like you will probably be leaving here and going up to the far north country.
That's the plan.
But students can also go from here to the two programs at the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Yes.
What are their strengths in engineering? I know Fairbanks a little bit because I was up there, but I don't know the engineering school at Anchorage that well.
Yeah. Their programs are, well, their civil program's been around for a while, but they also have an electrical emphasis, a mechanical emphasis, and a computer emphasis there as well, too. Fairbanks is a PhD-granting university, but I've heard good reviews from the students that I've sent up to UAA, and that's one nice thing that we have a very good relationship with both schools, and our classes are articulated with both programs. So students don't have to know exactly what they want to do or even where they want to go when they come to school here in Juneau. That's part of what I think kind of the beauty of our program is it gives students a year to really explore the different areas and think about what they want to do before they just jump in and enroll in a particular program.
Lori, the employment picture for the students that you're dealing with is really they're forecasting their lives maybe 4 or 5 years out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering what we know about the current employment prospects for people with engineering degrees.
Yeah, you know, I think engineering is one of those fields that I never think twice about encouraging someone to go into the field of engineering because I think it gives people a lot of options as to what they can do. The field itself is so wide and so varied, and if you complete an engineering degree, you've got a really good math background, you've got a really good science background, you've had to take some good English courses along the way too, and so it means that you are a good problem solver and a good thinker. And so I think those skills can be employed in a wide range of employment opportunities.
So, Max, you're looking down the barrel at 3 more years after this semester at a minimum, and we're talking 18-hour loads to be able to pull that off. For those who don't know an 18-hour load, that means with a math class that's usually like 5 credits, 4 or 5 credits, then you got another 12 sitting on top of that. So you're taking 5, 6 courses a semester.
And I'll be working too.
A lot of people relax that a little bit, and it's not uncommon for engineers to finish in the fifth year or maybe the fifth and a half year or something like that. So do you kind of have this lined out ahead of you? Have you got a sense of what you're going to be doing in, say, 2013?
Well, hopefully. There's 2 different ways you can go about it. You can either take the huge class load and just do pure classes, or you can work too and take a smaller class for only like 12, 15 credits. And also at UAF, they have a lot of internship programs where you can work at the mines surrounding the area, and you can like spend spring break working in Prudhoe Bay where the old company is up there. So there's other ways to approach it that even if you're going to take a longer time, maybe even 6 years to graduate, you can still have a lot of work experience behind you.
And make enough money to pay part of the freight on this thing. Is an engineering degree an expensive proposition at University of Alaska?
Well, there are a lot of different scholarships that students could be eligible for, and there's one actually in particular that I wanted to talk about.
Please do.
And so for any high school seniors out there right now, the Alaska Society of Professional Engineers, in combination with the Alaska Engineering Education Foundation, offer annual scholarships to high school seniors. And these are for anyone in Alaska. There are 2 statewide awards. One is $2,000 and one is $1,500. And then there's also a regional award for the Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau, or all of Southeast Alaska region. So students who are interested, all of the guidance counselors at the high schools throughout Southeast Alaska should have these scholarship applications. You can also get to it through a link on the UAS website. And I'll give you that in a second. But the application deadline is January 24th, and these are scholarship awards for any high school senior who is interested in pursuing a degree in engineering. So I encourage everyone to apply.
So high school seniors this is the semester now, the very end of this semester and the beginning of the next one, where college plans really have to start being made in a competitive college degree environment. Right. So if someone is interested in this program, what kind of deadlines are we talking about? When do you have to be registered for classes in the spring if you were ready to start the program now? You can start in the middle, right?
You can start in the middle, yes. Okay. Students at the college level who – I actually have a lot of students that start in the spring semester, a lot of Alaska kids that go somewhere else and then decide they want to come back home. And so I – routinely have students start the program in the spring. So registration is open now, and students can register. The first day of classes is January 17th. So anytime before then, a student can come in and register. And if anyone is interested in the pre-engineering program, I'm the advisor for pre-engineering students, so they can come and talk to me directly.
Is demand enough that the classes start to fill?
The pre-engineering classes are pretty small. Our numbers are pretty small, so those classes will not fill up. Some of the general education requirements courses may fill up. Sure. It's always good to be earlier rather than later. But even if you're late, come talk to me about it.
Would students who are coming into the program for the spring, starting in the spring semester of this mm-hmm. year, would they be eligible for that scholarship that you were talking about?
This is just for high school
seniors.
High
school students, okay. Yeah. But there is other scholarship money.
There are other scholarships available. There are, a lot of my students end up working internships with some of the local engineering firms. I've had a couple students working out at AELMP. AELMP has been a great partner to the program at UAS. They have hosted us to come out to Snettisham and tour the hydro facility out there. So if the desire is there, we can find a way to make it happen. So,
yeah, UAS is it's very convenient to apply for financial aid at UAS. They put that whole program, I think, online so that really mm-hmm. you do the whole thing from your computer screen. And
yep.
It's pretty simple to do.
Yep.
Did you find that you had scholarship help for the program, Max?
I did. I got the Alaska Space Grant.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, good. Well, deadlines for enrollment in this next term would be as soon as possible.
As soon as possible, okay. And classes start January 17th.
Right, and then if a high school senior is interested in the program, they should go see their guidance counselor now.
Yep.
And get started applying for something as wonderful as one of those scholarships and like that.
Right.
This
right.
is the pre-engineering program at the right. University of Alaska Southeast.
Yeah, and this scholarship is actually not specific to our program at UAS. This is just a statewide program. And so anyone who's interested in studying engineering that plans to go to an engineering school, even if it's out of state, of course we love to keep them in state, but would be eligible for this scholarship.
Terrific. Laura, Max, thank you very much for telling us about this incredible opportunity, I think, for Juno students.
Yeah. Thanks. And thanks for having us.
Way, you get no choice, you get no voice. Just stay mum, pretend you're dumb, and that's how you come to be a lady today. Then Jimmy come along and we set up a conjugation. We were busy every night with love and recreation. I spent my day at work so he could get his education. Well, now he's an engineer. He says, I know you'll always be a lady. It's the duty of the darling to love me all her life. Could an engineer look after or obey me? Remember, dear, that you're my wife. As soon as Jimmy got a job, I began again. And happy at me turret lay the year or so. And then the morning that the twins were born, Jimmy says to them, kids, your mother was an engineer. You owe it to the kids to be a lady. Dainty as a dish rag, faithful as a chow. Stay at home, you got to mind the babies. Remember, you're a mother now. Well, every time I turn around, there's something else to do. Cook a meal, mend a sock, sweep a floor or two. Holding out the potty when the baby wants to poo. I was gonna be an engineer. You know, I really wish that I could be a lady. I could do the lovely things that a lady's supposed to do. I wouldn't even mind if only they would pay me. And I could be a person too. What price for a woman? You buy her for a ring of gold. To love and obey without any pay. You get your cook and your nurse, for better or worse. You don't need your purse when the lady is sold. Ah, but now the times are harder and Virginia's got the sack. I went down to Vickers, they were glad to have me back. But I'm a third-class citizen, my wages tell me that. And I'm a first-class engineer. The boss, he says, we pay you as a lady. You know you only got the job, cause I can't afford a man. With you, I keep the profits high as maybe. You're just a cheaper pair of hands. You've got one fault, you're a woman. You're not worth the equal pay. A bit you're tart, you're nothing but heart. Shallow and vain, you got no brain. You even go down the drain like a lady today. Well, I listened to my mother and I joined a typing pool. I listened to my lover and I put him through his school. But if I listen to the boss, I'm just a bloody fool and an underpaid engineer. I've been a sucker ever since I was a baby. As a daughter, as a wife, as a mother and a dear. But I'll fight them as a woman, not a lady. Fight them as an engineer.
The Holiday Pops Concert is being put on by the Juno Lyric Opera. They'll do the fourth annual. It's being conducted by Sally Smith. It's Saturday, December 10th, tomorrow at 7:30 at Chapel by the Lake. And then there's a second showing on Sunday, December 11th at 3 p.m. at Juno Arts and Culture Center. It's 23 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO FM.
Get off the bus and I can see my breath. The air is so cold that you could freeze to death. I turn up my collar and the wind starts to blow. And the sky turns gray and it begins to snow. Put down my head, it's only two blocks more. I make it to my house and then I open the door. Smells like winter in our house. It smells like winter in our house.
It smells like winter in our house. It smells like soup. When my dad was a kid in my grandma's home, she taught him how to start with the old soup bone. You put the water, carrot, celery, and onions in the pot. It only takes a little of whatever you got. There ain't no way to hurry, and my grandma would remind, anything with waiting for is gonna take time. It smells like winter in our house. It smells like winter in our house. It smells like winter at our house. It smells like soup.
Well, soup has a special meaning for my next guest. With me on the telephone all the way from Sitka, Alaska, down there in the far south, is Will Slagle, who runs a website of some interest called Sitka Soup. Hi, Will.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Hey.
Yeah, we have rain in Juneau. I know you never have that down there in Sitka.
It's cloudy. It's not raining at present.
Oh,
but,
how could it be?
But the ground's wet.
Yeah, well, earlier today I was en hood, as they say in Juneau, completely covered and with my rubber boots on. It was. So the thing is called Sitka Soup.
Yes.
That's a sort of a novel title for a print publication that's largely web-based. What's the concept?
Well, I purchased the name about 12 years ago from a lady whose philosophy was that everything goes in the soup. And it was before we have the wonderful electronic transmissions we have now, so that it really was people coming in and writing stuff down. And she sold some ads as kind of a shopper. And then we built it up a little bit with some local columns. And then we have a crossword in it that has local clues. And we have a kids page. And then we have a column called Our Town, which is where the book, The Bite Before Christmas, came out of.
Well, I'm hoping you have solutions somewhere for that crossword puzzle, because I tried to work it. I'm not a Sitkin. I had the map out, and I'm trying to figure out what some of those street crossings were. So
yeah.
You
well, the last one was special. You're talking about the one where we incorporated the clues right into the narrative.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that was special. We had to do something because we didn't have room for the regular crosswords, so we kind of combined our two features into one.
Well, sometimes I spend my Sunday afternoons cursing Will Shorts.
Yeah, he's a genius.
He's amazing. But anyway,
yeah.
I think you may have outdone him for raw difficulty and serious questions.
Yes, and if anybody's interested, in the soup, we have the website sitkasoup.com, and every one of them is posted there. After they come out. We come out every other week, every other Thursday through most of the year. But it's kind of like one small piece of the Capital City Weekly. I mean, it's not, anything on that scale. You know, much more a humble publication is befitting a smaller town.
How is it among Sitkins? Is it pretty well known?
Yeah, very, very, very popular. One of my favorite things is listening to our delivery person. We take January off, so we're publishing our last issue, which we just sent out to the printer today. Comes out December 15th, and then we take a long break till February 9th. When we come back on February 9th, people are pulling them out of our hands. So it is really well known, but I did want to talk about our book also.
I want to hear about this book. We got a chunk of it, by the way.
Okay. You'll be going to that later.
Right in the middle of our conversation, I intend to get you to do an introduction to this thing, and then I'm gonna push the magic button here, and it's gonna play.
Okay. Very good. Well, the soup also goes out to Tenneke and. Cake and Angoon and Pelican and Port Alexander, and they share among themselves. Like we sent 25 or 30 out to cake once, and I called them and said, well, you've got a few hundred people. Would you like some more? And they said, oh, no, we share them. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, we call that pass on. In the,
yeah, right. Well, that's kind of good, really, you know.
Yeah. So yeah. You got a book.
Right. We in the column, the Art Town column, one Christmas, I was thinking, you know, so, you know, some fisherman is out there, you know, on Christmas, and Santa has to come visit him, you know. So I started thinking about that, and some lines came to me. And so for a special little Christmas treat, I rewrote The Night Before Christmas, where Santa comes in a skiff pulled by sea creatures, and he...
Hey, don't give too much of it away now.
Oh.
No.
So anyhow...
No plot spoilers here.
Okay. So that started off as a column in the Art Town, and then developed into a book from there. But I have a lot of fun with the Art Town column over the years. We've had a series of bumper stickers we did one time, where the only one that's sticking in my mind now is Sitka, 6 billion herring can't be wrong. And, I can't remember any of the other ones right now, but we've had letters. We have a character we've developed called the Soupster, who's nominally me, but he's kind of taken on a life of his own. And he, is the subject of Art Town. And we also, take guest writers. And the only, requirement is that the Soupster has to make an appearance, no matter how minor. So he could be just walking down the street and somebody could say, oh, there's a Soupster.
Huh.
And that's enough Soupster to qualify. And we've had some really good ones that people have written in. But we've done hundreds and hundreds of them. And about, well, 200 anyway, 250. And they're all archived on the website also.
So if somebody got crazy and wanted to write one of these, all they'd have to do would be look at that to kind of get the format, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. It must have a connection to Sitka, and the Soupster must make an appearance, no matter how brief.
Ah, okay.
And it's 500 words and $50, which isn't bad pay.
Hey, no. I'm trying to do the math in my head. That's not much per word.
10 cents. 10 cents a word.
Hey, let's listen to Bite, shall we?
Okay, very good.
Okay, so here it comes. This is the special version of The Night Before Christmas for Alaska fishermen.
Exactly.
'Twas the night before Christmas. Throughout Sitka Sound, not a creature stirred anywhere on the fish grounds. The hoochies were hung in the wheelhouse with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The swabbies were nestled all snug in their berths, dreaming of cruise shares they soon would be worth. And Mom in her hellies, and I in my tufts, had just set the hook where it wasn't too rough. When out in the spray there arose such a flapping, till I found what was up, I wouldn't be napping. Athwart to the starboard I jumped with some dread, threw open the porthole and stuck out my head.
Huh?
And what should the dark waves I visaged now feature but a mythical skiff drawn by 8 ocean creatures, with a little old captain so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his denizens came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Coho, now Humpy, now Lingcod, now Orca. On herring, on dolphin, on gumboot, on tuna. To the top of the swell, to the top of the squall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As the whitecaps that drive before a big blow, those fishies rose out of the water below. Right on to the deck of our boat up they flew, with a skiff full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the deck the slapping of tail fins in one steady thwack, the scraping of metal, the screech of the latch, and there was St. Nicholas in through the hatch. He was dressed all in rubber, in greens and in reds, all covered with slime and remains of fish heads. A duffel of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a fishmonger opening his sack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, enchante, his stomach the size of the fairy Leconte. He smiled in the shape of a boat front, the bow, but he smelled like a section of seldom-scrubbed scow. His gut was bleached leather, the tone of a bellyfish, that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jellyfish. He was corded and gnarled, a right salty old tar, and I laughed when I saw him, in spite of his scar. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his craft, depositing goodies for all fore and aft. Then, laying a finger aside of his neck, he swept himself upward, back out on the deck. He sprang to his boat, to his mates cried, "We're legal!" And if that little skiff didn't soar like a seagull. But I heard him exclaim as he sailed into space, "I'll be back. Russian Christmas is here in 12 days."
An amazing piece.
Well, there's artwork that goes with it that is just phenomenal. And I want to give a credit to the artist whose name's Colin Herforth. And you can see some of the art on the website, thebitebeforechristmas.com. But I have to say two things. Bite is spelled B-I-G-H-T, like a small little anchorage. And the other thing is you got to put in the, because if you put in bitebeforechristmas.com, you get a Christmas time festival in Key West, Florida.
Which may not be all bad.
That's a good point. Right, so you got to say the bite before Christmas.
Okay, and that gets you to the correct website.
And that gets you to, and you can see the artwork there because it really does add a whole other dimension. But thank you for your compliment.
So now
it was a lot of fun doing the recording.
If I wanted to own my own copy of the book, I'd order it off the website, or are you in bookstores as well?
We are in several bookstores in your listening area that I did want to mention.
Okay.
In Juneau, we're at Hearthside, and Observatory Books, and Harry Plumbing and Heating.
It's an interesting little bookstore. That
We sell a lot of books in ship chandleries, and we
So if you need a little stainless steel hardware, a replacement for the anchor, and a copy of the book,
and a copy of the book for sure. And then the Fairweather Prince Christmas store in the Nuggets Mall.
Oh, okay.
And in Angoon, we're at the Angoon Trading Company, and in Hoonah, we're at Tideland Tackle and Marine and the Hoonah Trading Company. And in Tenneke, we're at Snyder Mercantile.
What if I'm looking for this book on the shelf, what size is it? Just to curiosity.
Oh, it's your normal, it's the size of a sheet of typing paper, like turned sideways.
All right.
And, it's a paperback. It's, but it was, it was printed right in Juneau. It was printed at Alaska Litho.
Ah.
And because that we were printed and published in Sitka and printed in Juneau, it has the nice Made in Alaska polar bear on the front. And we're very proud of that. We're a totally Made in Alaska product.
Hey, Will, you transitioned over. You used to be working for KCAW, I think, right?
I did, back in the 80s. You have a good memory.
So what's the deal? Radio held no more thrill for you and you went to print?
Well, about 87, I moved over to the newspaper. I guess I've always been kind of a print person, mostly. And I moved over to the newspaper. And then in 93, I left the newspaper and went freelance. I have a good wife with a good job, and that is a tremendous help. And we do the Sitka Soup, and now we do the book. And we have a few other projects not to fruition yet, but...
The other day I interviewed the managing editor of the Capital City Weekly.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking about the fact that with the kind of tailspin of international journalism that's happened over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, that locals and shoppers seem to be actually not hit nearly as hard by that. She said there were some changes, but she said it really wasn't a major effect on her paper. Same for you?
Yeah, you know, the I think in general, you know, while Sitka's felt, you know, some effects, I'm sure, you know, of the recession and certainly in terms of people's, you know, stocks and things, I think, you know, it was much harder hit on the economy that the cruise ship tourists are coming less here because they're staying more on the inside. And so we've pretty much escaped that, and the soup had a good year in 2011, and we're hoping we'll have a good year in 2012, too.
Good. Well, the book is called The Bite Before Christmas.
Yes.
It's available in bookstores throughout Southeast Alaska, including,
exactly.
You mentioned 3 or 4 in Juneau, and Harry's Plumbing and Heating,
yes.
A place that I go and get. That's where I get most of my new titles. Copies of the Sitka Soup archives, in case you get crazy and want to write the soupster up in a little one.
That's right. You can look at them right online. It's called Whole Soup.
And the and Whole Soup tab is on what website?
It's on the SitkaSoup.com website.
So if you Google Sitka Soup, it's almost impossible not to fall into that one. And one more caution, if you are looking for the website about the bite before Christmas,
yes,
be sure you include that little THE space on the front of it,
exactly,
or you'll wind up in Florida.
Very good.
Hey, well, it's
very
a delight
good
talking to you. We'll have to
hey,
do this again
too,
sometimes.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Okay.
You have a wonderful time.
Hey, catch you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 9th of December, 2011. It's the birthday of the poet Lanny Adams, born Brooklyn, 1899. She went to Barnard College, fell in with a group of girls who called themselves the Ashcan Cats, included Margaret Mead. They bobbed their hair, they loved Edna St. Vincent Millay, and often when they went out to eat, they'd bring a candle, put it on its side, and light it at both ends while they recited Millay's famous poem, "My candle burns at both ends, it will not last the night, but ah, my foes and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light." It's the birthday of the poet John Milton, born in London, 1608, ruined his eyesight staying up late reading by poor light, and from his 40s on, Milton had to dictate his writing to a secretary, often one of his daughters. It's the birthday of Jean de Brunhoff, born in Paris, 1899. He was living in Paris with his wife Cécile, a pianist, when their two young sons got sick. And to amuse the boys, Cécile told them a story about a baby elephant from the jungle who sets out for the city after his mother is shot by a hunter. The children loved the story. They told their father about it. So he, an artist, decided to illustrate it. His brother was a publisher, and that's how the story of Babar came to appear, 1931. It was a big bestseller. Brunhoff wrote 6 more Babar books. He was working on the last one when he died of tuberculosis at the age of 37. One of his sons, Laurent, was also an illustrator, so he eventually took over the franchise. It's the birthday of the writer and folklorist Joel Chandler Harris, born Eatonton, Georgia, 1845, a reporter for the Atlanta Constitution, where he first wrote down the stories that he had heard from slaves as a young man, the Uncle Remus stories. Much to his surprise, the stories were popular, and he wrote a book, Uncle Remus, His Songs and His Sayings. It was a bestseller in 1880 and ever since. And it was on this day, 1854, Alfred Lord Tennyson's poem The Charge of the Light Brigade was published in the London Examiner, describing a disastrous charge by British cavalry 6 weeks earlier, October 25th, in the Crimean War. It was all a misunderstanding between officers who disliked each other, and so they did a poor job passing on orders, with the result that one of the generals, confused, led the Light Brigade into battle against a fort. and out of 600 British soldiers, at least 110 died. There were reporters and photographers at the scene who saw the whole thing, and in about 3 weeks it was in all the papers for everyone in Britain to see, including Tennyson, who sat right down and wrote six stanzas beginning half a league, half a league, half a league onward, that became his poem, The Charge of the Light Brigade. Here's a poem for today by Alden Nowlin, Andy Shaw. Three generations, and he loathed them all, bought meat from Andy Shaw, who clerked for Edder, working 6 days a week for 30 years, hating his job and looking for a better. He never married, and he blamed his wage, never went more than 20 miles from town, and every year came earlier to work, cursing the butcher shop that tied him down. When Charlie Edder died, his son came home to run the store, so Andy got his pay. Some claim the old man cried, offered to work for less or nothing if they'd let him stay. Alden Nowlin's poem Andy Shaw from What Happened When He Went to the Store for Bread, published by the Thousands Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Betsy Allister. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 14 minutes to 4, and you're in tune with KTOO FM. You've got Juno Afternoon. I'm Pat Moore, your host. Classical guitar music by my next guest. And we are lucky enough to have Dan Hobson here. That's from his newest album entitled Solo Classical Guitar, with a wonderful signature of Dan Hobson on the front cover. Dan, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. I appreciate it.
So the piece that we heard was an African or an Afro-Cuban lullaby, and you were saying that it was arranged by the teacher of your teacher? Is
that... Oh, actually, I studied with Christopher Parkening for a while back in the early 80s. Jack Marshall, his cousin, arranged that piece, and that's Parkening recorded it back in the mid-70s, I believe it was. So it's one of my favorite pieces to play.
So you started out not as a classical guitarist and then studied...
Correct. I played a lot of different instruments. I started with piano lessons when I was a kid, went into brasses. I actually played the trombone most of the time through high school and played in a jazz band, actually a professional jazz band for a while. And then college marching band and everything. But then it was the 60s and, you know, guitars were the thing to have. So I picked up a guitar and played folk music fiddle and banjo kind of things, but primarily stuck with guitar, folk guitar, for quite a few years until my early days here in Juneau back in the early 70s.
So was it the music festival that gave you the grounds to get going in Juneau music? Or?
Actually, the thing that happened was I had formed an acquaintance with Linda Rosenthal, who was living out the road at the time. I didn't have a car. I used to hitchhike into town, and I met Linda through that. We became friends, and she came over to my little cabin in the woods one day and said, "Look, I'm having a lot of trouble with these pianos in the bush." She was traveling with a piano accompanist, and she had a stack of piano scores and said, "Do you think you could do these on guitar?" I said, "Well, probably, sure, I'll try it." So, cut a long story short, yeah, I did a bunch of transcriptions, and we went off and did our first concert down in Port Alexander, 1978, I believe it was. And Linda had contacts all through the State Arts Council with school districts all over the state, and we eventually formed a program of, I guess you'd call them light classical standards, and played them, through the Northwest Arctic School District, Southeast Island School District, Savoonga, Glen Allen, Kodiak, Valdez. We went all over the state for a couple of years. It was pretty exciting, and in the process of that, of course, I'd been playing this steel string folk guitar, and I realized that this wasn't the right thing to do. So I switched over, bought a classical guitar, took some lessons, and learned these pieces well enough to travel and play with Linda as her accompanist. And that was really the big dynamic thing that gave me the push into classical guitar.
I guess I'm probably showing my own ignorance here, but could you explain the difference between that makes a guitar a classical guitar?
Sure. There's two things primarily. Classical guitar generally has a wider neck, and it has nylon strings. It's based on the Torres style of Spanish classical guitar that developed in Europe and Spain. Most folk guitars are steel strings, have a narrower neck, and they're more built for real volume, playing it behind a band or something. Classical guitar has a kind of a softer, sweeter, much more expressive tone. So that's generally the difference in the instruments.
And then the playing style, of course, is completely different.
Fingernails on the right hand, and there's a lot in tone production and the angle of attack on the strings, and the use of vibrato. There's a lot to it. It's a challenging instrument, which is part of the reason that I loved getting into it.
How many guitars do you own?
Oh, I only own three or four, I guess. I haven't counted recently. No, I don't have a huge guitar collection like some people do. Yeah.
And do you have a favorite?
Favorite guitar?
Guitar, yeah.
Well, I have two favorites. One is it's actually you can plug in a cord and put it into an amplifier, and that's the one that I use when I'm playing at the hotel on the weekends. I play at the Baranoff Hotel for dinner music on Friday and Saturdays. And so then I can use that small amplifier just to boost the sound a little bit. But I have another nice old classical guitar that sits around in the living room. That's my comfort guitar that I sit around and play.
How do you sense the difference between your guitars?
Between those two guitars?
Yeah, well, between, you said you have three or four.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to get at how a guitar expresses itself, how you feel.
It's the resonance of the sound and sound production that you get out of it. Some instruments just sing to you, and that's why I say that my favorite guitar is like that. This other one that I have that I play at the Baranoff, it also sounds wonderful, but the nice thing is that it has the electrification that you can plug it into an amplifier.
You said you provide dinner music at the Baranoff.
Correct.
Do you ever feel like you wish they'd pay attention to what you're doing?
Oh, at times, you'll have these times when, you cruise through a piece and you think, wow, I just really nailed that one. And then, the people just continue eating their macadamia salad or whatever, and, you know, it's fine. And it's funny, other times, you know, you'll play a simple little Fernando Sor guitar study or something, and you'll get applause. So it's just totally unpredictable. But the thing I like about it is I feel like it's functional music. You know, you get functional music where you're playing while people eat or with a dance or while they're having a wedding or something like that, as opposed to sitting up on a stage and people sit with their hands folded in their lap and stare at you, you know. It's a nice, I don't mind that atmosphere at all, you know. You got the clatter of dishes and people talking. That's fine. Works for me.
And when you did this recording, you know, the CD, you have, I can't remember the count, you have 23 songs on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did you record that? Did you record, like, were there songs that went together that you wanted to do as a set so that you could kind of...
No, see, that doesn't matter. You're going to rearrange them and, you know, edit them and everything. So I recorded these all locally at Studio A, which is upstairs at the Jack,
mm-hmm.
With Albert McDonald. And then Betsy Sims came in and helped me do the mastering at the end. But I actually recorded about half the album back in 2008. kind of put it on the shelf for whatever reasons. But then I picked it up again this last summer at the encouragement of some friends. And basically, I would go in and I'd prepare, say, three or four songs. And in a two-hour session, I'd sit down and play three times through in a piece until I thought we had good, you know, good recording. And then take it home, basically, and sit there and listen to it for hours and, you know, go back and forth and see what parts are good or what song all the way through is good. So there's a lot of editing that goes on.
And then the other question I wanted to ask about the pieces is, were there, you know, I'm going to go back to the guitars for a second. Were there any pieces where you felt like you needed the other instrument, in other words, changing the instrument because of the music?
Yeah, that's a good question. But no, I think one limitation was that we were taking the direct sound from the plug-in, in other words, the direct line from the guitar that I play at the Baranoff there, plus the acoustic, you know, and Albert was, you know, welding those together, mixing them together. Whereas if I went to the other guitar that didn't have a pickup, it would be probably a noticeably different sound. So we just kept it the same instrumentation all the way through.
I don't want to put you on the spot. Could you pick another piece off of your album for us to kind of go out with?
Oh, the last piece in the album is one that when I first heard it, the Evocación by José Merlin. Gorgeous piece. When I first heard my friend José García play it, I thought, wow, I got to learn that piece. And so it makes a really nice finished piece of the album.
Well, wonderful. The album is called... Solo Classical Guitar, Dan Hobson. I'm assuming that one could buy this.
It's available at several local outlets, bookstores, at the Jack, at the Baranoff Hotel, okay. State Museum, UAS Bookstore.
Dan, thank you very much for sharing some of your musical history and your music with us.
Well, thanks, man. It was a pleasure.
Let's listen to another piece of it. Music by Dan Hobson from his new CD, classical guitar. Wonderful bit of music there. Tomorrow on the show, or actually Monday, we'll talk with Nicole Hollingstad. Jeff will be in, and she'll be here to talk about the Sealaska Shareholder Information Fair. Carol Starjaluski will be with us with Jeff to highlight her new book, White House of the North, about Alaska's Governor Mansion. And the Wednesday Brown Bag presentation on growing great greens will be highlighted. Southeast Master Gardeners will be here with Jeff to talk about that. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you can tune to K276 AF. We're on 103.1 there. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1 MHz. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also hear KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. KRNN is on 872, and KXLL is on 873.